not the whole system, are unable to adjust. When that happens, a situation can easily spin out of control. In the case of the Muhammad cartoons, the internet played an important role in stirring anger and violence, not only in its role as conduit for the drawings themselves, but also by helping to spread the angry commentary that followed in their wake. Sometimes overconnectivity leads to violence. Sometimes it triggers serious accidents. Sometimes it takes a company, or country, to the brink of bankruptcy. When I talk with people about overconnectivity, most wrongly assume I am referring to the overabundance of technology in our lives. Indeed, we are all too aware of the nagging buzz of iPhones and Blackberries as they disrupt meetings, meals, and movies with their never-ending stream of emails, instant messages, and tweets. This book, by contrast, is about human behavior, how the actions society takes have become so complex and interwoven that the simplest ones have effects far beyond what we imagine. When the 17th century poet and clergyman John Donne wrote his famous line, "No man is an island," he continued, "Every man is a piece of the continent, a part of the main." He was writing at a time when the most important interconnections were still local. If Donne were to write those words today, he might say, "Every man is a piece of the world." What happened on a local or regional basis in the past is now occurring globally. We no longer co-evolve with just our neighbors. We co-evolve with the world. Connections can be loose and weak, or tight and powerful. Some connections are so weak they don't matter. If two people live in neighboring houses but never talk, they are very weakly connected. If two Americans live 1,000 miles apart, they are connected because they are both U.S. citizens, but the connection is still very weak. If they both join a white supremacist group, they become more tightly connected. If they start interacting over a website for white supremacists, the connection becomes stronger still. 300 million people live in the United States, and we are all connected to one another in some way. In the 2008 presidential election, more than 67 million people voted for Barack Obama. All of them believed he was the best candidate, and all were connected by that common cause. For many, that single vote marked the beginning and end of their bond. Others became strongly connected to one another by working together on the campaign. It was those strong connections, in the end, that created the momentum that got Obama elected. One person who could not have foreseen the unprecedented level of interconnectivity that permeates society today is William Ogburn, the early 20th century sociologist who coined the term cultural lag to describe the social misalignment that occurs when one element of a culture changes and other elements don't. Although Ogburn was no Luddite, he pointed out how painful the adjustment process to technological advance could be, and he concluded that to slow down such advance might be beneficial, if only to forestall the revolutionary upheaval that too rapid progress has the potential to inflict on society. When I first read Ogburn's work, his ideas struck me as alarmist. To a technologist like myself, the very notion of slowing the pace of technological progress was heresy, and the idea of technology triggering revolution seemed fanciful at best. But then, in late 2005, when the internet brought the Muslim world into direct contact with Danish political satire, and deadly riots broke out around the world the next year, Ogburn's ideas did not sound so far-fetched after all. If the interaction of technology and social upheaval was William Ogburn's concern in the 1920s, one can only imagine, especially in light of the sheer ubiquitousness of the internet, what he would think of the cultural lag in today's society. In fact, we are no longer facing a mere lag, a term too benign for our situation. In Ogburn's day, change was slow compared with today's change, when, driven by the internet, it is instantaneous. As I reflected on the impact of the internet, I came to realize that our economic and social institutions reflect the environment to which they are connected. As connectivity changes, institutions transform themselves to take advantage of those changes.